All right, it is time for another episode of African Analysis, which is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. And as always, we have our expert, our man who knows more about this continent than almost anyone I know. He is none other than JJ Cornish. It's always good to see you. JJ, how are you?
Bonjour. I'm very, very well. Thank you. Nice of you to ask.
You're looking excellent in the suspenders. A very good statuesque look for you. I like this.
Yeah, I don't have a belt with them as well, so I'm being cautious.
Well, you're being brave. That's right. Well, listen, we have a lot to talk about this morning, and we have to start with the unhappiest country in the world. Now, I thought I knew what this was, but a lot of these countries are in Africa. Is that right?
A disturbingly high number. Yeah.
Okay.
The way I got to learn about it was I was dealing with Togo just over a week ago, and they were called the unhappiest country in the world. And I started to look at that, and I haven't stopped. How do you measure it? I know the Sultan of Brunei. Now, he's a guy that hasn't tapped you for help with the car payments in a little while now. He measures the happiness of his subjects as opposed to measuring GDP and others, you know. And the Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand prime minister.
Former one.
Who got too tired for the job.
Yeah.
She was also measuring the tracking the well-being of people and looking at things like domestic violence, child poverty, housing and stuff like that, measuring that as the happiness of her people.
Now, I remember we had something called the Failed States Index, which we've discussed on African Analysis before.
We have, indeed.
And then they do line up things like child mortality, growth, unemployment, lifespan, mortality rates, all that kind of thing. Is that still what
we use? All these things. I've got 14 for the Oxford Sustainable Development Index. The Gallup poll, World Gallup poll, I've got something like 8 for them. But the interesting one was with – there is one interesting called the it's called the Hadley Control Ladder, and this was an economist. I think his name was Wilbur Hadley, and he came up with a number of things that would make people happy or make a country happy. And his index at the moment, the happiest country is Finland.
Oh, really?
And don't hold your breath on Finland. They have been the happiest country on a number of indexes, and there is a plethora of indexes. The happiest country in the world for the last 7 years.
I mean, we can get into this on another day and time because I don't want to argue with these people who know more than me.
Yeah.
But I've met Finns and they're particularly nervous about Russia just across the border. And they're not exactly the most successful Scandinavian country either. So I dispute whether or not they're the happiest. What I won't dispute is that Togo is one of the unhappiest. What are the metrics involved there? Why is Togo so miserable?
Well, Togo was they were left out of the aid section. Their political makeup was sad. I mean, when you look at business and economy, the citizen engagement in politics, the community, diversity in the community, education, the environment and energy, government and politics, food and shelter, law and order and safety, health, religion and ethics, transport and work, things like that. And they fall way behind on that. But they're no longer the unhappiest. They're down in that list, but they are it is now Afghanistan, which is the unhappiness. And that shouldn't surprise
you. Fair enough,
But the unhappy African countries are Togo, Burundi, Benin, Rwanda, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea, and of course Chad, you know, which you're going
to
talk about with
Chad
the elections.
Yeah. So why is Rwanda in there? We're told that Rwanda is just wonderful. Everything's perfect there.
Only people who say Rwanda is wonderful are the Mlungus who visit there because they come away saying that place has no litter.
Right.
If you drive a dirty car in Rwanda, you can be locked up. Yes. And the people get together once a month and clean up their neighborhoods. And I think it's pretty safe. I've walked around there at all hours, but then I've done that. But this has been drink-induced, you know, when I've done that. But and I felt perfectly safe. I got pickpocketed in Ethiopia in the middle of the day. So, you know, you pays your money, you takes your choice in Africa. But it's so interesting that, and how are they going to change this? The happiest country in Africa, being African Analysis, is You won't believe this. I'll give you 20 guesses and you won't get Libya.
Really?
Unbelievable.
So the more anarchic, doesn't necessarily mean you're less happy.
No. They've killed the brother leader, so maybe that made them happier. But it's very interesting. South Africa falls about halfway up the scale. It's more than 140 countries on that index, on most of those indexes. But other countries that are unhappy, Zambia, Eswatini, Malawi, you can hear all of those. Zimbabwe, yes, of course. Congo, I've mentioned as well. No, I haven't mentioned Congo before. Lesotho's not happy. Sierra Leone's not happy. And Botswana, another country that was a paragon is a paragon of democracy in this thing. I've had dealings in Botswana. I sold a newspaper chain. I brokered the sale of a newspaper chain. And I found that the Tswanas are fairly spiteful. The government is fairly spiteful in their dealings with people, you know. And they do things like if you say something bad about them, they stop advertising in your newspaper, you know, things like that. But I would have thought that they would do very well. And certainly the Tswanas tell us, you know, why our guys are unhappy and that we are not letting our wealth trickle down far enough, but they are and so on. So they do shake the finger at us. And, of course, Botswana was a refuge during the liberation times, and they took some punishment for that from the Boer forces. But it's very interesting that it's way down on the happiness list.
All right, so these countries, you've mentioned Chad, and I know you said that they're going through their elections. What is happening in Chad?
Well, you see, that Mahmoud Idriss Deby, the son of Idriss Deby. Idriss Deby died on the battlefield in 2021, in April, having served 30 years as president. His son came in, sort of pushed his way in. He wasn't elected. Mm-hmm. So it became yet another of those countries in what I call the tsunami of coups, but they've now held this election. He's won it, though. That will come as no great surprise to you. And the thing is, the U.S. military had to leave just before that election, and the commander of the U.S. Africa Command was saying, no, we weren't kicked out. They asked us in the circumstances to leave.
Yeah.
You know, and so we got out. We don't want to be imposed. And you know that the U.S. Africa Command really battles to find places in Africa to put their troops. When Madiba came to power, they thought, aha, we'll get him. He'll welcome us. And, of course, that never happened. And they're in Stuttgart, you know. That's where they have their headquarters.
They've been there since World War II.
Yeah.
But JJ, Chad is in a difficult position. It's in the Sahel. It's obviously quite a tough place to live.
Yes.
Not very stable in terms of politics and the economy. But it's also got this tension that Nigeria and Niger deal with.
Yes.
With
the Islamist groups, yes.
And the French, and now the Americans.
Well, they booted out the French, you see.
Correct.
They did boot them out.
But if these Americans do get back in there, it's not going to be what they left.
No. Well, you've obviously been reading my mail, because the Russians, the Chadians, like others, have gone over to the Russians. For example, when we speak about Sudan, you'll see there too the Russians are on both sides of that argument. But they've gone in, and there have been reports that the bases that the Americans vacated, fully intending to turn back or to return, are now occupied by the Russians. So they're going to have to move Johnny Russia out before they can move Uncle Sam's men back in. It'll be very interesting then.
Now, you and I will have a conversation on Democracy 101 about elections, but would you say Chad's elections are free and fair?
No, certainly not. Certainly not.
Oh, no. I was being hopeful.
I'm certainly, and the opposition, but that's pro forma, has objected very, very shortly. It was interesting. They said their full results would only come out on the 4th of June. After our election results, their election is last week. Ours is in 2 weeks' time, but they were going to take that long to count them. But now they have, and they have given Mahmoud Idriss Deby 61%.
Okay.
So at least he hasn't gone for the 97-98%, which some shameless African leaders, including Paul Kagame of Rwanda, have done.
It's always in the 90s.
Oof, yeah.
Okay, so let's turn our attention to a much sadder situation, and you and I discussed this not so long ago in African Analysis, and that is this ongoing situation in Darfur. And now, obviously, there are updates on this. We know that conditions have not really improved for people. It's been the longest running, ongoing ugliness on Africa's sort of a pockmark on our face.
It was the biggest humanitarian crisis on the planet when the Darfur struggle began. That's about 10, 15 years back.
And I remember Angelina Jolie was out front making a big noise for it, but it seems to have been put on the back burner.
Well, it did, but it's now come back. The thing is, it's still to an extent on the back burner in the sense that it is, by any measure, the worst humanitarian crisis on the planet right now. Mm. Now, the Rapid Support Forces, which are the paramilitaries fighting against the army, and they have been fighting now for just over a year in Sudan, they have taken the capitals, except one of the capitals, the north, south, east, west capitals, El Fasher, but they've taken Al Janina, and the reports there of Darfur of children being piled up and shot.
Oh my God.
There's 15,000 people have died.
Yes,
now, sadly. And the thing is, and I've spoken to you, I think I've used this phrase before. The reason why the fighting hasn't stopped is because both sides still think they can win. Sudan, the scene of the longest running civil war in Africa between 1983 and 2005. And the reason that stopped was because both sides thought, we just ain't going to win this. And so they stopped fighting. But it's very interesting that Russia, as I said, is on both sides of this conflict. The Wagner Group plus the United Arab Emirates supports the RSF, supports the rebels, as it were. And the Russian government is behind the army of Al-Burhan. So, and with those things fighting, I mean, the United Nations is saying, and people are saying, the only way to stop this is to increase the arms embargo from Darfur to the whole of Sudan and to stop, and those countries that are supporting either side to cease doing this. Many have come in as mediators. They've actually, I think that Al-Burhan and Hameti, the head of the RSF, have actually looked at each other in the eye since this fighting started. But every time they try to get any kind of talking going, it stopped. And so there we are, deadlocked in fighting with a warning by Human Rights Watch, a long report, a warning that we are facing, or that we're actually in the middle of a genocide now in Darfur.
It blows my mind that Russia is still front and center in so much of what we're doing here in Africa. I mean, you'd think they really had their own backyard issues to worry about, but it just seems that they cannot keep their sticky fingers out of everywhere.
And they've got nothing to offer, you know that?
No.
Push comes to shove. What are they going to do?
No.
I mean, remember the jokes with us that they gave the liberation movement snow plows and stuff like that. And but I mean, it was fairly
ridiculous.
And
a really bad AK-47, ones that they couldn't use in Russia. So, all right, that's Africa Analysis for this week. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, and it's always good to catch up with JJ Cornish, and we will have more of this for you on the podcast party. Like, subscribe, get involved, and make sure you get the latest episode as it comes out.